Hello again, and welcome to another episode of Podcast DX, the show that brings you interviews with people just like you whose lives were forever changed by a medical diagnosis. I'm Lita.
I'm Jean Marie.
And I'm Ron.
Today, we're talking about a therapy that many heart patients have never even heard of. Even though it's FDA approved, non-invasive, and for some people can act like a natural bypass, I guess, instead of a bypass operation. It's called EECP, which stands for Enhanced External Counter Pulsation. Our guest has spent over 700 hours on an EECP table himself and went on to write a book called The Most Underutilized Therapy in Medicine. He is here to share what he's learned as a patient, researcher, and advocate.
We're very pleased to welcome Jack Clifford to Podcast DX. Jack, thank you so much for being here today.
Thank you, Jean Marie. I'm super excited to be here.
Jack, let's start with your story. Before EECP, what was going on with your heart and your health? What symptoms were you living with? And what were you being told about your options?
Yeah, so 5 years ago, and I was dealing with progressive angina. At that time, I didn't know exactly what it was, but I didn't know that that's the label they put on it. My symptoms were chest pain upon exertion, and increasingly less exertion would cause that chest pain, and then it began to feel like shortness of breath rather quickly. And I was only 47 years old.
Okay. So rather young to have this.
Right.
I think so.
And what did your cardiology team tell you?
Well, I had just moved to Florida when this happened. And so I didn't even have a cardiologist. I mean, I didn't have a reason to have one before that.
Right.
So if I got introduced to a cardiology team, it was in the hospital when they admitted me. And they did a nuclear stress test, which includes a imaging and then putting you on a treadmill and seeing where they can trigger your heart to actually have challenges upon exertion. And they admitted me right after they did that test in the emergency room. And they told me that they were going to do a heart cath and I would be consenting to bypass surgery. And most likely it would be that I would wake up from anesthesia with having had a bypass.
Oh, wow. At what point did EECP first come into the picture? Was it something that a cardiologist offered or something that you found on your own? Or did another patient tell you about it?
I laugh a little when you say a cardiologist offered it because that would be unusual. I'm sure it's happened, but it's pretty unusual. So I was loosely aware of EECP. And when I say loosely, I mean, I knew it existed, but I didn't know what it is or how it worked or anything. And I only knew about it because my mother had a heart attack and had triple bypass surgery, experienced a lot of cognitive issues post-surgery. And I looked into alternatives for her if it were to have happened again.
So okay.
Based on that knowledge, I knew that there was not very many places you could get EECP, and the closest place to her was 2 hours away, and the therapy involved going 35 times. So it wasn't feasible for my mom at the time.
Okay.
And then 5 years later, I'm in the hospital, and I just knew about it. I didn't know where one was. I really didn't even know how it worked. I didn't know how much it costs. I didn't know if insurance covered. I didn't know really anything. I just knew that bypass wasn't the only option.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So as you were being, or as you were discussing it with the cardiologist, did you say, hold off on the bypass until I look into this other treatment?
Yeah. Well, I was in the hospital. It was the day after Christmas in 2020. It was COVID, and, you know, I was not allowed to have any family or friends in the hospital with me.
Right.
The cardiologists there weren't even aware of EECP.
Okay.
And I'm going to add that something I only recently learned, that cardiology team, this is kind of very frustrating for me to share and think about, but they actually have an EECP machine.
Oh.
They just don't use it.
Okay. Oh, wow.
Yeah. Yeah. So they definitely didn't tell me about it. They told me that, you know, bypass was my only option because I'm 100% blocked in my LAD, my Widowmaker artery, and 95 in my left circumflex and 80 in my right, and, you know, unstentable, right? Mm-hmm. Diffuse lesions throughout. So I was really bad off. Like, it wasn't a small thing. Like, I was, anyhow. And I didn't want to go through bypass not having explored all other options. You know, it just seems extreme when it wasn't an emergency situation. I had angina, but I hadn't had a heart attack. So my heart muscle wasn't at risk in the immediate moment where you had to, you know, rush me off to the procedure room or surgery room.
And do you have, so is there a genetic component to your heart condition?
Yeah, usually. So my grandfather in his 60s, my mom in her 60s, but, you know, more mid to late 60s.
Okay.
And this to me, you know, was 47. So, yeah.
And from what you've told us, you've spent, you know, 700 hours or more utilizing the EECP machine. That's right. A long amount of time. Seeing as this, well, it's been, you know, 6 years, not quite 6 years. But for our listeners who've never seen the machine or even heard of the machine, can you paint us a bit of a picture? What does a typical session with the machine look like? How does it feel, you know, actually utilizing the machine?
Yeah, I'd be happy to. So ECP, like you said, enhanced external counterpulsation. It's also referred to as external counterpulsation. The enhanced part is just a trademark term for one of several manufacturers.
Okay.
They just labeled their machine EECP, but it kind of became ubiquitous in the culture. So most people say EECP, but some people
like
say
Kleenex
ECP.
For tissue.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Okay.
Good analogy. But the therapy itself just involves lying on a bed, and then the technician will strap you into cuffs that are, you know, kind of like Velcro wraps along your calves, your thighs, and your hips. And then you have a 3-lead EKG that's placed on your chest. And then there are air bladders inside the cuffs. And then in between heartbeats, those air bladders inflate, and they start at a pressure of about 1.3 pounds per square inch. And then that feels kind of like a gentle massage,
mm-hmm.
very well tolerated. And then over one session and then over numerous sessions, the pressure is increased. And then you goes up to 6.0 pounds per square inch, which feels kind of like the opposite of a gentle massage.
Yeah.
But your body learns to, you know, tolerate that pressure. It becomes what it feels like a lot of pressure at first will feel like not nearly as much over time.
As you get used to it. And what does that squeezing do?
So it's pushing the blood from your lower legs in your, well, I guess your, all of your legs, including your hips, right? Mm-hmm. Up into your upper body. And that's forcing this phenomenon called shear stress into all of your vasculature, including your legs. And shear stress is basically what, if you're going for a run and you're pushing yourself, you're getting some level of shear stress, which tells the body, hey, you know, you have to do adaption to handle the flow that we need to get through these pipes.
So is that why they call it a natural bypass then?
Yeah, because over time you release growth factors, basal endothelial growth factor, VEGF, for example, which is a factor that's released into your circulation by your endothelium, which is the inner lining of your blood vessels when they undergo that shear stress, which tells your body, hey, you need to be ready to grow vasculature in certain places. It tells the endothelium, hey, you have to get better at making nitric oxide so you can expand on demand and just get bigger.
But well, that what you've said, it makes a lot of sense.
Well, I'm curious, before Gene does it, because I have a bad memory and I'll forget what I wanted to say.
Okay.
I'm curious if there is pressure put against all the arteries and veins, or I guess the arteries, right? No, the veins. It's returned to the blood.
Okay, what?
Could it damage the walls of the vessels with too much pressure?
Is that why it's a slow progressive buildup to increase pressure so that your body is acclimating to that pressure?
No, there isn't really any reports of it being able to damage anything if you were to use more pressure. It's just uncomfortable.
Okay.
Well, my other question is, could the pressure like force the blockage out?
You'll have to look at the script.
Like you're saying, if you had a placking, the placking could get released because of the pressure. Intuitively, I thought that too, and I think most people do, but that's just not how blood flow dynamics work.
Okay.
So no, those plaques a clot has to burst, which the impetus for that wouldn't be flow. It would be deterioration of the clot. So there's been no reports of that. And keep in mind, ECP has been around for 30 years.
Okay.
Well, and I think a lot of our listeners out there who are fitness enthusiasts, runners, or athletes, we can kind of picture what this equipment looks like to some extent because of the usage of similar but non-medical devices utilized for recovery.
Yeah.
Like are many
Normatec pants.
Yes. Yeah. Yes. So, a lot of runners and other individuals use these, the leggings with compression for recovery.
Right. Okay.
But this is a medical application for that, not simply a recovery from...
Yeah.
Inflammation.
Well, I would paint the difference as like a bicycle versus a Ferrari, the Normatec being the bicycle.
Okay, kind of extreme. Extreme ends of the spectrum.
The pressure.
Yes.
The pressure in the synchronization and the timing of the ECP versus Normatec makes them just really kind of different ballpark type therapies. Normatec is good for sure.
Okay.
And similar therapy is. It's great for moving lymphatic system, but it's not going to grow vasculature.
No, it's more just for slightly reducing inflammation and improving recovery.
Agreed.
Okay.
So who is EECP usually used by? In your research and experience, what kind of patient is typically a good candidate and who is not?
Well, This gets in some really interesting territory. It starts, I think, by realizing that EECP might be the most well-researched medical device on the planet. There's a lot of really good science going back decades and decades. And, small for example, just last week, a new study was released on EECP and cognitive decline. And basically the results said that ECP fixes dementia. Published in a really good dementia journal.
Never heard that before.
What was just published? Get to your computer. Look it up now.
Yeah. ECP fixes long COVID. Also well published. ECP has a role in really any disease process that has blood flow as one of its primary drivers or lack thereof. So examples like kidney disease, peripheral vascular disease, erectile dysfunction, to some degree, Parkinson's. I could honestly go on and on about all the off-label potential treatments. I will say I documented all this on a site I created to help patients learn about it, but also to find their access points, which is another challenge because there aren't nearly enough. And that's eecplocator.com. And I all the off-label conditions, I've got all the evidence, you know, sort of written in a way that it's easy for patients to understand the rationales. But you know, it's primarily used, and it's historically been just used for angina and to a lesser extent, heart failure. And it works really well for both of those.
Okay. Good to know.
But are there any counter... or are there any individuals who maybe this may not be recommended for?
Yeah, for sure. So some of the common contraindications would be if you have an aortic aneurysm. And you want to get evaluated by a physician to make sure that your anatomy is conducive. Because, you know, it puts a lot of pressure on your thorax. So, like, if you had an aortic aneurysm,
okay,
that's a real risk factor.
Okay.
Certain valve issues, most valve issues are not necessarily a problem, but some valve issues could be in your heart. If you had a deep vein thrombosis, so you actually had a clot that's in the process of dissolving in your body, that can be a contraindication. And other than that, you know, there'd be a few other like strange ones that probably almost never come up, but like, you know, a hernia, because it's putting a lot of pressure in your pelvis. Or if, you know, obvious ones like pregnancy, or if you have an open wound, or if you've had a really recent surgery, you know, all of those things are things you want to have, you know, considered.
And from your own perspective as a patient, when did you notice that a difference? Was it a gradual difference, or was there?
Yeah. So ECP works, you know, really just like cardiovascular exercise, but you're lying on a bed, so it's comfortable, and you're putting your body through levels of cardiovascular exercise that are superhuman, meaning it doesn't really matter how fit you are, you couldn't reproduce this on your own. And so for like me, the earlier vascular issues become the ones that get fixed first and you notice first. So, you know, not to get overly personal here, but, you know, I was dealing with erectile dysfunction, which is common with men, predates their heart disease usually or their stroke issues by several years, right? So about 10 sessions in, I noticed stuff. Let's say you wear these yoga pants and they, you know, you got cuffs over your hips and they have to uncuff you. Awkward moments. But, you know, ultimately good awkward moments if you've been dealing with erectile dysfunction. That was some of the early signs. But I also had, you know, I mentioned the access issues. I couldn't find anywhere to treat me. There's only about 15 places in all of Florida that do this. And a lot of them, because of the way they've set up the insurance rules and just, I think, a general lack of true understanding of the value of the therapy, they want to wait till after you've had stents and bypass, and they just basically have nothing else to offer you, and then they'll put you on the machine, which doesn't make any sense.
Wow, it should be the opposite, I would think.
Exactly. So I had to drive 3 hours and stay in a hotel to get treatment, and I set up my own little treadmill because I needed to know that this was, you know, the investment was worth the expense and time and energy. That's obviously not an easy thing to do. Stay in a hotel for weeks on end. And so I was getting chest pain at like 2.2 miles an hour, usually about 8 minutes in on a treadmill. And so I learned to just kind of stay below angina, but kind of play with where it would come in. And then I got 19 sessions in this little town in Florida, 3 hours from me. And by the end of that, I could trigger chest pain at 2.7. So I'd gained a half a mile of speed, which was, you know, far from where I wanted to be, but it was real noticeable progress. Now, I will say after 700 hours, mm-hmm. I can run a sub 7 mile.
Oh,
I'm
wow.
still 100%
okay.
blocked in my LAD.
Okay.
If you were to image me, you'd be like, man, this guy's a mess. Mm-hmm. Heart's a mess. But I've grown all these little bypasses, like,
sure.
Thousands and thousands and thousands of them that, total flow capacity more than make up for what those blocked arteries would normally be able to accommodate from a blood flow perspective.
Got it.
And I have a very strange question. You may not have the answer for this question, and that's perfectly okay.
Okay.
When doing all of your research and everything, have you come across anything? Is anyone utilizing such a device for individuals who are spending extended periods of time, like, for example, in the space station? Or are they looking into utilizing...
Or diving?
Well,
it's funny you mentioned diving, because I was just talking with the lead engineer for one of the manufacturing companies yesterday. I've been really getting to know this space deeply over the last 5 years. And mm-hmm. he mentioned that he's like, for, decompression syndrome, mm-hmm. From diving, this clearly has a role.
Right. It would be the reverse, where you would start at high pressure and then reduce down. Whereas if you're in space and you have no pressure, and then they start to suffer from
on the space center.
Because they don't have.
That's great. This is so interesting. You guys should also consider that the technology has really changed. So there's not a lot of machines in the U.S. There's only about 150 access points. I would actually want to bring up, though, that China has 5,000, right?
Okay.
And China, this technology was jointly developed with U.S. and Chinese scientists, and then China took it back to their country and did a certain things with it. And the U.S. did something really different, and that's kind of one of the differences is the access points. But we haven't begun to explore the full utility of this. I'm really dedicating myself to solving this access crisis. I want EECP to be an option for every person in the U.S. that is faced with a decision about a treatment, and everyone they want to choose is fine. I just want them to have the knowledge and realistic access.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So is
yeah.
that why you call it the most underutilized therapy in medicine?
Mm-mm. It so is. Yes.
And have you talked with other patients and explained to them about EECP, and what did they say when they first learned about it?
I tried to build EECPlocator.com to make that conversation a lot easier. I've got like 90 patient testimonial videos on there, categorized by condition. I've got all the research broken out by condition type that it would relate to. I've got, just general tutorials. We've got advanced training for technicians and providers. And, most importantly, an easy way to find your access points. And I actually grade them, because I'm trying to shift the conversation into really understanding that this isn't just a salvage therapy when we have nothing else to offer you in the cardiovascular space, because it should be a first line treatment for that, in mm-hmm. my opinion, but also, it applies to all these other conditions too.
Are these machines very expensive?
Are the machines expensive
or
the therapy or both? The machines run about the price of a decent used car.
Okay.
And first of all, I'd say I'd take the bus before I'd be without my ECP machine, but that's just me.
Right.
Somebody can get a machine, a provider can get a machine, a patient can try and advocate to have their provider get a machine. If they want to get in touch with me, I can help people get machines and help them learn how to use them and become providers themselves. One of the things that is really neat is, and very little known, is that the FDA approved EECP for general circulation in healthy people. And healthy people is just defined as, are you healthy enough to undergo EECP?
Okay.
Meaning you don't have any contraindication.
Okay.
So people can be, people can use this therapy for all different kinds of conditions and reasons. And that's a new indication, I should add. Well, in 2015 is when the FDA added that, so it's fairly new, but it hasn't really been maximized as far as the utility of that.
Maybe you need to write a letter to, who is it, Mackenzie Scott?
And the flip side, what kinds of questions and
she takes me down all the time. Go ahead.
What have you heard from cardiologists and other clinicians about their concerns or
skepticism?
Yeah. So, I mean, first of all, it doesn't matter if it's a patient or a provider. You almost always hear ECP what, mm-hmm. and I'm trying to really change that. But for cardiologists or other providers that are aware of it. There's quite a few cardiologists, you know, out of that 150 access points, maybe 70% of them are cardiologists. And those individual cardiologists, I think, have a sense of the value, and they decided to really adopt it and promote it. But, you know, they're picking their own pocket doing that, because they can do a stent in, you know, 2 hours and $10,000, and if they put somebody on an ECP machine 35 times over 7 weeks, they're not even going to barely make about half of that.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
So, and that ties up a patient room and a technician, and you know, the investment to you have to make as a provider to make ECP available is a lot, and the return on investment is not a lot. That's a systemic issue with our medical system. It's
mm-hmm.
not
absolutely
ECP's problem or ECP's fault, but. Now there are it's just also kind of misunderstood in a way that, like, when I had my heart cath, I told the doctor that was doing the heart cath, his cardiologist, I said, I'm going to do ECP. I don't want to bypass. Because mm-hmm. they were like, oh, you have to have it. It's emergency. And it wasn't emergency. And he says, oh, that'll help a little bit. And you know, he was right, depending on the hours, I suppose, right? You get in what you get, you get out of it what you put into it, and one ECP session plus one ECP session doesn't equal two. It might equal five. They stack on top of each other if they're done, you know, at time frame wise close together. So imagine 35 hours, you know, each one making the next one that much more effective, and then imagine, like me, 700 hours.
Right.
You know.
I guess it's more like when you're perhaps you're looking at it more like lifting weights rather than watching TV. Watching TV, the time is not going to make your future TV watching better, but lifting weights, your future you're going to progress.
Which actually brings me to my next question. It's definitely a big time commitment, and you did more than 700 hours. What can you tell us? What can you tell the listeners about the grind? Again, because it is
the grind. Yeah.
And can you watch TV? Can you listen to things?
You know, when you learn how to maximize it, it doesn't feel that way anymore. But I can see how it would in the provider's office versus, you know, doing it at home, which is what I do now. It's a long hour, and your body, you know, gets better at tolerating the pressure. So when you're feeling a lot, when the pressure feels like a lot, it's just, you know, uncomfortable. But one of the neat things about it is you can stack any other therapy on it. You're on the machine for an hour. So like I stick a red light on a helmet on my head, and it's called a V light, and it's been studied for enhancing your brain and whatever. And it's actually more effective because I'm getting two heartbeats while I'm on the machine. And so the blood is flowing twice as fast throughout my body in certain ways. And so it makes that red light therapy even more effective. But the biggest thing that I found is it's a chance to do breath work. And my breath work has gone from essentially like, I don't even know that I knew how to breathe right, to what I think is incredibly great breath work. All day, every day. Like I have reflexively parasympathetic breath work now. So I go into parasympathetic mode whenever I'm under stress, and I just naturally breathe really well. But that started because the machine's pulsing to the beat of your heart, and then if you learn how to really breathe right with your diaphragm, you'll learn you can actually I can drop my heart rate 30 points for 20 20 seconds on demand. And somehow that just translated over time to, you know, just naturally better breathing throughout the day. As a small example, there's a lot of other really neat things that you can get out of it. Or you could just sit there and be bored.
Okay.
Not like that you're stuck on the machine anyways.
I'd be listening to an audio book. Mm-hmm. Are there any side effects or discomfort that you can experience during it? And was there anything unexpected? And how did you and the team work that out?
Well, it's really helpful to have an empty bladder because it's going to push on your bladder and it's making your kidneys like really push fluids. So, you know, you may have to get off the machine and use the bathroom. And people tend to grin and bear that, and then they just get increasingly more uncomfortable. And it's like, don't do that to yourself. Mm-hmm. Tell them to stop, get off, use the bathroom, get back on. It sounds like a pain, but that's what you need to do. And you feel like you're going to be inconveniencing somebody else, and, you know, just don't do that. But sometimes, like, the pads can, you know, be in a bad spot for whatever reason. It'll just sort of like hurt sometimes when other times it doesn't, just because of where it is. And they can wrap an extra, you know, cushioning around you right where those spots are. And so you should definitely be advocating like, hey, this isn't right. Let's wrap up, you know, some kind of cushioning over this particular area so it's not uncomfortable.
Okay.
But otherwise, it's, you know, it's very well tolerated. I mean, 100-year-old people use this machine all the time.
And you've described EECP as life-changing for you. And reflection, how did it change your, you know, just basic day-to-day life?
Wow. Well, let's start with the fact that I used to need 8 to 9 hours of sleep a night. My whole life, I've been kind of the late guy, you know, not that I was late to work, but if I had flex hours, which I usually did, I would always come in late because I was just kind of struggling to get up and get going every day. Now I need about 4 to 5 hours of sleep a night. And I track my sleep on my Oura Ring, like I always have. Mm-hmm. And I get the same amount of quality sleep. I just do it in half the time. And that's because if you guys were, I don't know if you guys can, are you guys able to see me? Or?
Yeah.
Okay. Can you see this, this temple vein? I've got really big temple veins.
Oh, okay.
And I grew those over the last 5 years, and they feed my brain, right? So my cognition has changed a lot in the last 5 years.
Okay.
And I credit EECP for that.
Well, like you were saying, that there may be research showing that it can help with certain conditions.
Yeah, more than just the heart.
Right.
So, Jack, for one of our listeners or any of our listeners who might have chronic angina or heart failure, they might be thinking, hey, this sounds like something that would be for me. What are some specific questions that these folks can bring to their cardiologist to see if they'd be eligible for the EECP?
Yeah. Well, first of all, you know, ask if your provider is familiar with it, and there's a good chance they're not going to be, but then I'd direct them to the EECP locator site because they can get familiar really easily. We've got all the guides. I've got a clinical reference guide for providers so they can just quickly familiarize themselves with it. It'll guide you to EECPbook.com where my book is, but I've you know, made it all pretty easy to integrate with all the different information. You may have to advocate for them to consider getting a machine I'm always open to a conversation because I've got ways to help people get this therapy if they want it.
Okay.
One of the things I'm doing is I've got a national demand aggregator. So on ECPlocator.com, you can go to the pop-up clinic model and just let me know you'd like it to be brought to your area. And then once enough patients in a given area have expressed an interest, we'll find a way to get it there. Work with the local providers, and you know, nobody's really done that work yet. Like educated people nationally and shown that, hey, you know, you can have this. It doesn't matter if it's in your area right now. That's a solvable problem.
Mm-hmm.
But of course, you want them to rule out the contraindications. So you might want to get that information off of the ECP locator site and bring it to them, or ask them to go there and educate themselves on it just to make sure that there's nothing that you have that would be an issue.
Well,
it rarely is, though. I mean, I also want to add that even with a lot of the contraindications, like, this pressure is infinitely variable, right? It goes from, like I mentioned, 1.3 to 6 in increments of 0.1. And so if you, like an example is, if you're familiar with POTS, this posterior
Gene and I both have POTS, yep.
Mm-hmm. Okay, well, it works really well for POTS. But POTS patients aren't necessarily going to tolerate the pressure the same way everyone else is. But you can adjust that pressure. The patient can be engaged in the pressure setting, right? Mm-hmm. And you can stay at lower pressures, or you can really slowly titrate up. In either case, if a POTS patient started at some high pressure, it might make them think this is not for them. But if they start at base pressure and really, really slowly come up, they're going to have a whole different experience. Yeah.
Okay. Well, since we really advocate for our patients and try to get them into a position to better advocate for themselves.
And communicate with their healthcare providers.
Right, right. What do you think people should tell their healthcare provider if they are told, I don't think EECP is right for you?
Well, I mean, it's always good to get a second opinion, I think.
Okay.
You got to find out where your access points are, or if you want to facilitate an access point, engage with one of the ways I've done that on Locator. There's several ways to do that. But if somebody's telling you it's not for you, you really want to understand the reason, like what's going to happen. If I have an aortic aneurysm and it's going to burst, I'm going to be dead. Well, that's a pretty good reason not to use an ECP.
Yeah.
Right, right.
But if it's, if it's AFib is a great example of that. AFib, a lot of people might say, oh, that's contraindicated. And it kind of is and it isn't. So one of the issues with AFib is that the machine has to have regular timing. It has to be able to read your heart rate, basically. And if your heart rate's jumping from 60 to 120 from 1 second to the next, mm-hmm. The machine can't keep up, right?
Right.
But somebody with AFib, if that happens, they just turn the machine off. Just see how your AFib goes, because AFib in some ways is about remodeling of the heart. It's about you having not optimal blood flow in your heart over time, that causing the AFib or at least contributing to it. And so, ECP can help AFib because it can help unremodel the heart. If the heart's gotten weak and stretched in the wrong ways over time from trying to work when it doesn't have optimal blood flow, then, trigger the nerves to not be firing right. But as it gets optimal blood flow, it can start to remodel in the direction, and it can actually make your AFib better if done right. But if you hop on the machine and the machine's timing is off and so it's not really working right, you could be like, oh, you can't use ECP. Well, so it also kind of matters the technician you work with, so they understand the therapy and what their level of clinical experience is. I'll give you like a small little example. I was working with a patient not that long ago that had pretty bad heart failure. And the machine was contributing as the pressure went up, her O2 sat going down, and that was kind of scary. I just thought to myself, because she kept saying she wasn't breathing well, just generally. And so I put a nasal expander on her nose, right?
Mm-hmm.
And then that dropped her heart rate by 5 points within 1 second. And then her O2 sats just shot right back up, and it made a giant difference just helping her breathe through her nose, So that's where your nitric oxide, a lot of it is made. And it made a real difference. Small little things so experienced providers and make a real difference.
Okay.
And for individuals and our listeners out there who want to learn more, without getting lost in maybe technical jargon, what resources do they have access to? And can you point us in the right direction?
Yeah. Yeah, so I'm updating the ECP locator site all the time. I've put in a lot of time and energy the last couple of months to make it better and better. But there's a start here button when you go to the homepage, ecplocator.com. Mm-hmm. I would really encourage everyone to just go there, and it will sort of interview you for where you're at in the process of ECP learning, and then direct you to the right resources. So I really think that'd be the easiest way to start educating yourself.
Okay.
And so, we'll have links for that and some other resources on our page for this website or for episode.
Great. Thank you.
So, Jack, we're getting to the end of the interview, and we always like to end the interviews with something hopeful for our listeners. So for someone, one of our listeners out there who've heard that they run out of options for their heart disease, what would you tell them? What would you want them to know from your experience with the ECP?
Yeah. And I was in that boat very much, right? 5 years ago, feeling very scared and very helpless. So I guess I would want them to know that doctors don't have all the answers. They're just human, like everyone else. Generally speaking, they're just doing their best, overwhelmed in a sea of information. And so, know that ECP, and there are other things, like, you know, hyperbaric oxygen is an example of something that has, you know, it's helpful because it helps oxygenate the blood and the blood goes all over the body. And, you know, like there are lots of therapies out there that can really help you. I don't think hyperbaric oxygen can do what ECP can do, but I think it can really maybe even help ECP work even better. But if I had heart failure, and so many patients have benefited from ECP with heart failure, I would be like, I'm going to get 35 hours on ECP and see how I feel, and then go from there. But I do want to caution that all the studies were done on 35 hours, and there are kind of arbitrary logistical system reasons why, but you might need more than 35 hours. But that doesn't mean that you're not going to get better. ECP can, it can just do things that no other therapy can do. It's incredible.
Okay. Well, Jack, thank you for sharing your story with us and all those mm-hmm. hours of hard-earned knowledge with us today.
Yeah.
And we are definitely going to put we're going to definitely put a link to your book, The Most Underutilized Therapy in Medicine, and your website and educational resources about EECP in our show notes.
And thank you so much. Yeah, thanks for taking the time to speak with us. We really appreciate it.
Yeah, I've enjoyed the conversation a lot, guys. Thank you.
This podcast is not intended to be a substitute for professional medical advice, diagnosis, or treatment. Always seek the advice of your physician or other qualified healthcare provider with any questions you may have regarding a medical condition or treatment, and before undertaking a new healthcare regimen. Never disregard professional medical advice or delay in seeking it because of something you've heard on this podcast.
Till next week.